Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we have George Dixon joining us. And I think we're going to talk about the Sixth Night and fairy tales. Not sure exactly. But we'll be talking about that.
The Sixth Night of the Mayan calendar, that is.
Sixth Night of the Mayan calendar, yeah.
Just to clarify for folks.
And those of you who followed, which, we've had a very good audience for our Friday night programs, and but for those of you who have followed or may not have been following, George is going to be talking about the sixth night of the Mayan calendar and the progression and timeline and so on, and how it's affecting us, how it's affecting you and me and Lila and everybody. And we're getting closer and closer to an understanding of our emotional and intellectual selves.
And by the time we understand that, we'll have moved on to something else.
We'll have ascended.
Out of the Mayan calendar and into some other kind of calendar.
We'll be into infinity, actually. We'll be into a timeless state where time and space have no...
you don't know that.
Well, that's what
kind of state you'll be in.
Yeah. But it was timeless and spaceless. Kind of looking forward to that.
Nothing you can do about it. It's coming, whether you are or not. Something is coming, folks.
Hey, George. You with us? Hello, George.
That's weird.
You went to get a coffee or something. Hey, George, are you with us? He called in again.
Let's try that one. Hello.
Hey, George.
Hey, George,
how
you
doing?
Can
you
hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. We clicked on. Did you call in twice?
No.
You didn't?
But I heard you in the background. Hi, how you doing tonight?
Oh, we're fine.
You didn't call twice?
No.
For some reason, I got you on twice over here. I don't know why.
Well... Possibly, I got no answer the first time I called.
Oh, that's bizarre.
That wasn't even a dial tone or anything.
I'm gonna hang one of you up and see if that.
Okay,
works.
Hang me up.
No, I'm gonna try not to hang you up. Okay.
Oh well.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, you with us now?
Yeah. How you doing, folks?
Yeah.
I hung your doppelganger up there. All right.
Okay.
We won't have any ghosts talking to us tonight.
So, well, welcome to the show, George.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're always pleased to have you, and we're talking about the sixth night.
Yes.
And fairy tales.
Oh.
And fairy tales.
Yeah.
Fairy tales.
So, can you tell us exactly what the sixth night means?
Well, we're... what does it mean? I don't know what it means.
the Mayan calendar... Sixth night. And
well, we're living a reality, or we're living an illusion,
mm-hmm.
And this illusion that we've been living with for the last couple of years is playing itself out in whatever fancy that we elaborated it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually seeing our own play being played out, and we're the main actors and characters involved.
Mm-hmm. So do you see any similarities to past six nights right now in world events and in politics?
Well, I haven't really thought about going past to the the past, and that would be the period from about 1300 to about 1400, 1500. But we're in the cycle that we're in right now, I believe we're re-experiencing about 1977, 1978. So if you go back to those years, if you look at politics, we were right in a hub there of Jimmy Carter as president, and then Ronald Reagan taking over, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Is that right, Leo? You're better at that. Was that Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan?
What time are we in again?
77, 78?
Yeah, we're going through hell with him.
What do you remember about those years, Leo?
77 and 78?
Yes.
I'll let tell you in a second.
He's thinking. What do you remember?
Oh, what do I remember?
I remember working.
Well, I remember that time as it was a shift for me, I think, with money-wise and so forth. But it was a high time for finances, that's for sure. Everybody was making a buck, everybody was investing, and everybody was receiving.
Not for long, though.
Excuse me?
I said not for very long.
No, it was some good times, that's for sure. Very good times.
I started a business back in 78. And, it was 78.
Did it look promising when you started it?
It was weird how I started it, but I was working with a guy first, and then I bought a franchise. And I had concessions throughout the Sears Roebuck stores. And... Mm-hmm. I had five of them in New England, and I had five big stores, and it went on for, it did very well. I had about 15, 16 people working for me, and it did well for about, right about until 1981, and then the recession just killed everybody. Yeah, the stores were vacant, there were no people. I mean, you could be in a Sears Roebuck store and see one person an entire day, you know. It was just sad. So anybody in retail really got their wings clipped. A lot of companies went bankrupt, actually, during those periods.
That was when?
That was 77, 78. I bought my first house in 78. So that was 78, 79 was pretty good. Then like I said, 1980 came rolling around, and it was pretty rough. 81 was the worst time. That's right when Reagan came into office. Oh God. Yeah. But it was but that was the mark of the beast there. And then things weren't good for about a year or so there, and the market was pretty rotten. And then I got out of that, and in 82, 83 I got into financing and mortgages and real estate, 83, and then I stayed in that for almost 20 years. So what I'm saying is that the that period of time was very volatile time, right before the right before inflation went crazy, and all kinds of problems arose during that period. You got the basically you got Carter, and you got politically what happened. You got Zabrinsky in there, Brzezinski rather, and New World Order, and the global elite started to really take over. And by the time we got Reagan in there and everything, then it was just a friggin' nightmare. After that, we had just gotten out of Vietnam in '74.
When you say it was a nightmare, what are you referring to, Leo? Why was it a nightmare?
What? Which period? In the 80s?
Well, yeah, when Reagan came into office.
Well, when Reagan came into the office, immediately he started bashing all the unions. He gave tax cuts to the top, the 1%. Then he drove up the military. He tripled our national budget. Actually, he tripled the deficit within the first couple of years he was in office.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of that. And he brought conservatism in, which was a freaking absolute nightmare. So for anybody,
he busted the unions.
Yeah, he busted the unions. He busted the destroyed the civil service for what it was, and really jerked over the whole government. And then he screwed everybody else. He went into Iran-Contra and you know, he started killing South American socialists, yeah, and so on. And he started to, and the guy was one piece of crap. I mean, he was one shit. And you know, now they want to put him on the $50 bill, right? Yeah. I just joined a club. The owner of Q103 just started a club that was
to keep him off it.
To keep Reagan off the $50 bill.
Yeah.
And I joined. Yeah, you know, I couldn't stand the bastard. So, you know.
What year was he elected into office?
81. Well, 1980. He took office in 81.
81? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to remember those years, and you know, one thing I do remember what he did do is that he tapped into the Social Security system, I think, to offset the deficit.
Well, and no, that was Johnson. Johnson did that, and mm-hmm. you know, he tapped into that, and it's been
tapped into it
ever since. Yeah. So you know, everybody's been stealing from it. So
yeah, well, I know Reagan did his share of that, and you know, that actually was
Bush
they
and
used the
yeah, all those bastards did, and they've been stealing from it ever since, and they've been giving it to the military, you know, creating wars and every other god awful thing. So,
well, I don't think there's anything there left to give, Leo. I think it's just on faith.
They're borrowing. Borrowing. It's all borrowed money, you know, now
from China.
Right.
You know, China needs us to keep buying, so they keep propping up our government so we can buy. It's kind of silly, really, but, you know, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. But, I really don't know what the future is going to be because we've given away our industry to China through NAFTA, and... I mean, we're just sitting ducks now. It's hard to understand what's going to happen.
Well, we may be sitting ducks, Leo, but we're going to have to do something pretty soon, and it's within the next 3 or 4 years that we're going to have to move on that. Either we're going to wait for somebody else to move, or we're going to have to move ourselves. But
next 3 or 4 months, Georgia. I mean, you know, next 3 or 4 months. Don't look too good either. They're propping up the unemployment rate. They're propping up everything. You know, they're propping this up and propping that up and trying to keep it under 10%. You know, which is insane. Mm. And it's really the actual jobless rate is upwards around 20%, and everybody knows that. It's just that all those people are off the unemployment rolls.
Unemployment.
Right. They're not going,
but something is going to have to happen pretty soon, Leo. Somebody's going to have to step up to the plate here, because you know you're only going to be able to support so many out of work persons before it becomes a major burden. And I think we're going to have to be doing something pretty soon to this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Well, what do you envision doing? What, George? What do you think?
I don't know what we could do. First of all, you know, everything is our finances now are completely screwed up. I don't know what can you could say about the financial industry because everybody is on the borrowing edge. And they have to pay the piper, and nobody has the money to pay the piper. And it's just the way our system is set up now. It's a lose-lose situation. We're going to have to change.
No, you know that's not necessarily so, and I'll tell you why. Because all that money was created out of nowhere. All right,
mm-hmm.
It was all created by the banking system, and they created it out of thin air. Now, all you got to do is go in and say, "Hey, Mr. Banker, I don't owe you a goddamn dime." All right, and you know, and we use our resources, and say, you know, we're not going to pay you, or we will, or let's say we do say we pay you, we'll pay you 1 cent on the dollar, 1 cent on the dollar, all right. And at that point, once we pay you back 1 cent on the dollar, you are then forever banned from ever being part of the United States government monetary system, and get the hell of that out, if that's what you want to do. But personally, I'd just shoot all the bastards, and that would be the end of it. You know, that's what I would do. I mean, they're crooks, they're criminals, they're thieves. You know, and they're demons. And I would just go in with a phosphorus bomb and just blow the living shit out of these Club of Rome and the Bilderbergers and all these other bastards that are.
And what would you have accomplished, Leo, if you did that? What would you have accomplished?
I've accomplished the death and destruction of what of the worst people in the universe. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? You're still left with the situation you were at the very beginning. Ownership or rights over property.
No, there's not. Everybody gets a piece of everything. It's like, why does everybody have to own anything? You know, I mean, it's like, I don't understand that personally.
Because it is our God-given right to own things, Leo. It
didn't say, here, you have the right to own this. It says here, you know, live and be free. You know, if you want to own something, I don't care. You know, own it. If you don't want to own anything, here. You know, I'm still, you know, God shines his sun on both, on everyone, you know.
Well, let's come on back to, you know, what the gripe is right now, because we don't really have ownership, and that's what you're saying. We don't have ownership, even though we may have money, but it's worthless.
But ownership ownership is just is nothing. It's an illusion. You know, it's a total, absolute illusion. You know, because it can be taken away from you as fast as it can be given to you, and you know, without any recourse. And you're just, you know, done. I mean, a flood can come by, wipe you out. You're not insured. There you go. You don't own a damn thing, right? And the banks come in and say, hey, we want to take your you owe us money. You got to pay us back. You say, how can I pay you back? I got nothing here. All right. So what do? They come in, they take the land, all right, and they kick you off the land, and then they sell the land out, and they still have to make their money. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's all an illusion. You didn't. They never had the right to that property anyway. You know, neither did you.
That's not true. That's not true. You did have the right to that property, but
well,
you didn't.
Right to property is as anybody else's. It's, you know, you're as far as I can see. All right, in a perfect society, there is no personal ownership, okay? You know, that's what I see. That, you know, it's kind of like the Indians. You know, nobody owned the land, you know? And that's very true. And now you have people that are trying to kill billions of people saying, oh, there's too many people on the land. There's too many people for the planet. Who the hell are they, you know, to say there are too many people on the planet? You know, it's just absurd, all right? Now, you can't be my friend because I have to kill you. Your breath is heavier than my breath, so you have to die. You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense. That's what they're telling us, George. You know, oh, you emit too much CO2, so, you know, we can't have you, so you're going to have to die, you know? It's just a complete and utter delusion.
Well, the problem that we have right now is the rights and ownership, just like the way our constitution is set up right now. You know, we can't own land.
We really don't own anything. I mean, the state owns it all, or the town owns it all. We just rent it from them. You know, the proof to that. Stop paying your taxes to the town and see who owns your property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, it's not the bank that's going to foreclose, because the property tax supersedes any mortgages, all right? So that's the way it is.
Well, I think the real value has been taken away. It's been stripped away for so many years that, you know, we never really had possession of what we think we do have. But I think that's what the problem is right now. With money is worthless. But understand that our legal system is built around that money worth and so forth. And that was stripped away years ago by taking away our common law. And now it's negotiable law that we deal with. And it's getting back to the rights that we do have. You know, I was reading an article this week about, you know, the martial law and martial control. And this thing that I've been saying for years that, you know, the flags that are flying now, you know, in our courts and schools and so forth are military flags. They're flags of war. And the flag that flies, our constitutional flag, does not have a gold fringe around it. And these do have meanings, and it's a type of law that we do follow. And it's an admiralty type of law. And that flag is in receivership of monies due to somebody. And that goes back to, you know, agreements that were made, you know, even before our constitution or this land was declared. What we have to do is we have to go back to what is right and what is wrong. And right now there's a lot of people out there who've actually paid good equity for something of substance, of value. And I'm talking about houses that they bought. And what they did do is they put out sweat equity, a real wage work that they put in to, you know, pay for something that's worth value. And according to, you know, the other end of the banks and so forth, the banks put nothing up. There's no equity that was put up. That's where the rights that we have as common people and freemen do have rights over artificial boundaries and laws, and just like property that we own.
But
here in this country, we can't own property.
You forget that what they did is they created the money. They created it out of nowhere, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And they gave it to you. So in essence, they created the equity of that building. What they did is they know, okay, what's this value worth, okay? So they have an appraiser go out, appraise the property, come back, and give a figure, and they'll lend 80% on that of that money. Say, okay, well, land value shows that everything's selling at $100,000. All right, we'll give you $80,000. So right there, they created $80,000 worth of value. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Where? From where, George? Where did they get that? Where did they get the $80,000 to give to you?
It came from nowhere.
Came from nowhere. Exactly. They just wrote it out in a check, and somebody took their bad check. And, the system kept moving. So they created the money. So they also created the equity, because if you didn't have $80,000 to buy that house, say you only had $8 to buy that house, and everybody else only had $8 to buy the house, well, what did they do? They came in and said, well, it's worth $100,000, so we're going to give you $80. You give us $20. You know, which is still worth twice what the value of the property is really worth, which is $20,000. All right. Well, what did they do? They inflated the value of that property by creating $100,000 worth of money, or $80,000
mm-hmm.
worth of more of new money that came out of nowhere. They just created it. All right. And so they inflated that the value of that property by $80,000. And
yeah, but all they have to do now is collect that $80,000, and then they'll be the richer.
They know they still got a real $20,000 in it, all right? So what are they going to do? So the worst that could happen is they sell it out for $20,000, and they make their money back. They didn't put any money into it. They created that money out of nowhere, all right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so what do? They still made out. They bankers will always make out, you know? The only time they have a problem is when they borrow too much of somebody else's money, you know, too much money, say, from the Fed that they can't pay back. That's when they get a problem, because they'll borrow it for 1 or 2%. But if they can't get that kind of return on their investment, then they're in the hole, right? You know, so that's how the damn banking system works. And,
well, the people that extend that credit to them will put the squeeze on, that's all.
That's right. They put the squeeze on the banks, and the banks then put the squeeze on everybody else, hoping to recoup the money. But if they lent out too much money on bad property, then what's going to happen is they're going to fold, because they won't have enough money coming in to pay off the note that they borrowed from the Federal Reserve. or from their depositors. Even their depositors, you know, they promise at least a 1, 2, or 3% return on their investment, even if it's in a CD or something, all right? But if they can't afford to pay that back, that in their interest back, then they're in problems. And that's why you have the FDIC, because banks have a tendency to overinflate their own portfolios, and then when the crunch comes, they you know, they don't have the monies to cover the debt. And at that point, then the FDIC is there to cover, to protect everybody's
Yes, but that coverage is very limited, though, Leo. It's not that, you know, they'll cover or
really designed to protect the depositors, but the way
it is designed for the depositors,
but it's not
designed for anybody else.
Yeah, but absolutely. You know how that money comes in? The money that goes to the FDIC is paid for in premiums by the different banks. Okay, the banks it's actually supposed to be a self-insured government policy, where a government program where they actually the banks are actually insuring themselves, paying these premiums. Now what happened is the FDIC, because there's so many bank failures, have demanded now. That all banks pay their premiums up front. So in other words, if they have so much on deposit, then they have to pay a premium of so much money to protect those assets.
So tell me, how much is a depositor is he protected for?
$250,000.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, I think it was actually, I don't even know if it is that now, because I think it was up until either 2009 or 2010. I'm not sure. There was a deadline. There was a sunset clause in that. It might go back down to $100,000. But it went up to $250,000 for during the 2008 and 2009. That was revised. That was changed. But I know there's a deadline to when it stops, and it goes back down to $100,000. But I don't know if they're going to renew that or what. But they had.
Well, I'd like to see where they're going to get the money for this. First of all, where the money is coming for this?
Well, the money's coming. I told you, the money's coming from the banks themselves.
Yeah.
The premiums. The premiums are astronomical for these banks. The money they have to put up for the government to say that to be a member of the FDIC, because not all banks are members of the FDIC.
Oh, I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, especially money markets and different things like
that. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, those aren't FDIC.
How about savings and loans?
They're FSLIC, but there aren't too many of those around anymore.
They kind of went down the tube.
They got taken over. So I don't even know if there are anymore. They've all been merged in with the commercial banks, you know. But that's what happened there. And you really know they're really. I was reading something just recently about the FDIC being in very big trouble because there's over 500 banks.
They paid out a lot of money.
Over 500 banks are on their shit list, you know. And you know, big banks and Citicorp and everybody else, we had to bail out. So. A lot of deposits there that are being insured by the Fed, by the federal government. But you know, they expect more bank foreclosures this year because of the premiums. They can't afford the premiums to the FDIC, and they can't take the chance of not being covered by FDIC. Who the hell is going to invest in there? You know, who's going to invest their money into a bank? Or deposit their money if they're not covered by FDIC. You'd be crazy to do that.
You're right. You're right, Leo. And the way that things have been the last, let's say, 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is stable, and there is no such thing as security any longer.
That's right. But
so you know, how long is this going to continue?
Yeah, but these guys that put their money in the big hedge funds. Put their monies in, you know, the stock market and so on. There's no guarantees on those. They know that. And if they lose, they lose. But now what's happening is they want, if banks to invest, or these brokers invest. Now they want the government to bail them out. You know what I mean? Screw
yeah.
that. I mean, we did that, and it cost this country over $1 trillion, right? So why would we want that? Why do we want to do that? We wouldn't.
I think we're going to change our trust altogether in bankers and what bankers have been to us for the last 100 years, 150
oh,
years.
I think people already have shifted their feelings.
I think if anybody will do anything to get out of a bank situation if it's possible. But
I think a lot of people are by them not being able to partake in the buy and sell houses, you know, like normal people do. It's getting tougher and tougher for people to make a buck in that way.
Now
there is no investment in that area because of the long term fluctuation that you'd be committing yourself to. And you know, when I say long term, I'm talking about 10, 20 years for the market to have any substantial gains again.
Right. Well, the way that the gimmicks now that I'm seeing on television promoted are the probate programs and the tax programs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can pick up a foreclosure for $1,000. You know, but they ain't paying back taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's the other one? You can get probate. You can buy. You can do probates,
right?
Probated property for nickels on the dollar, and turn those around. But those are those are what you're seeing now. And I mean, any prudent investor isn't spending big dollars on real estate.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going in at 50 or even 40% of value. Is what they're buying property for now. Now, I mean, you can get $300,000-$400,000 houses now. You can buy for $100,000 at a foreclosure.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
yeah. So that's the kind of thing you're seeing out there more. Anybody who's thinking of making any money in the business is making them that way. Definitely not by owning them, but by buying them and quickly selling them and making a quick buck.
And quickly selling them, making a buck on it. But things have changed.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about those earthquakes that we've experienced in this last year, so we're down in Haiti, but also there in Chile. That was a terrible quake that we had.
Yeah, it just keeps reminding you. It makes you think about the end times because you can't help but think. You see the fires and the flooding and the weather and the volcanoes and the size of the earthquakes and things. Yeah, you just got to say, holy crap, and then the wars, and then everything that was predicted, 2,000 years ago is essentially
seems to
be here. And, it's kind of unnerving for anyone who's aware of it, but, of the prophecies and revelation. But at the same time, you have these different groups of people going about it in different ways. For instance, you get the conservative right evangelicals that believe that it's the end times and that Jerusalem is going to fall and be brought back to life and all the Jews will be devastated. No.
Oh, I thought they were going to be elevated and then they were going to be destroyed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they have been elevated by the right wing,
mm-hmm.
by the evangelicals,
mm-hmm.
and this whole war in the Middle East is being fought over them. So it's not an issue I don't think I think everything is coming to fruition. Everything is coming together,
mm-hmm.
the way it's been fulfilled and is being fulfilled. But at the same time, that is their prophecies. It's not mine. That's what they choose to believe. It's not what I choose to believe. And I can make up as great a philosophy or revelation as they have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And stick to it. everybody that the world will end in a year, all right? And if I got enough money and power behind me to do that, it can change history.
Sure, sure.
It can change history. So,
well, you know, I'm looking at that earthquake that we had there in Chile, and that was what, 8.8 on the Richter scale, that was some quake. We've never experienced or had readings of of an earthquake like that. And to think about the devastation, I mean, that's like 4,000 times more powerful than the quake that hit Haiti. And it's hard to fathom that. It really is.
Well, I thought Haiti was an 7.5 or 8 on the Richter.
Well, yes, but it didn't match the one there in Chile. Magnify that about 5,000 times, and that's what that 8.8 hurricane was, or earthquake was.
5,000 times, George.
Right. Yeah.
Wait. 5,000 times greater than
the. Then let's say a 6.5 on a Richter scale.
Is 5,000 times stronger than a 8.9? Is 5,000 times stronger than?
Yeah. Well, it's multiple thousand multiple thousands as the shake or as the Richter scale rises.
Wow.
It's a hell of a jump.
Yeah. Got it. But anyway, that's where we're at. I don't know what that means, but it didn't help their lives too much. I don't know if we're headed there, George.
Where is it that we're heading to, Leo?
Global destruction through seismic activity and through volcanic activity and through wars and pollution and chemtrails and every other man-made horror or device.
You're mixing them all together.
Yeah, well, I am, because they're all together, George. Everything's happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're getting nature and man fighting against man, and sooner or later, man is going to be sorely hurting, I think.
Well, he's slowly hurting right now, but he's able to overcome it just as fast as he's able to accept it.
Yeah, more
than that's a good part about it.
Yeah, suddenly hurting very badly. I'm kind of happy there's no earthquakes up in northern Connecticut here, but I wouldn't want to be anywhere near on a fault line right now, California or anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my thought on that. What else did you want to? Did you have to talk about there on the sixth night?
Well, I think Lila had some questions about the aliens.
Yes, I did. The last time we talked, have you been noticing any news about that in the newspapers or on TV, George, or on the internet?
I think it's just stuff on the internet that's being released.
Oh, really?
About,
I'm watching for things. What did you see?
Well, I think it's the acknowledgments of other countries accepting, the UFO phenomena, the UFO incidences that we've been having. And now countries are acknowledging it, just like Brazil isn't acknowledging UFO activity, along with France, England,
Russia,
Scotland, Israel, Mexico, of course. And, it's now at a point where, they've run out of excuses or out of explanations.
There's only so many weather balloons that they can count for,
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just wonder if it is going to if it's going to help. Defer, I think, a lot of these religious questions that are being raised right now. Are religions real or not? Do we really need them? And I think a lot of a lot of our religious basics are coming to the surface now, and it's for us to decide if we truly want them or believe in them or letting them go. You know, we talked before about Tolkien's work with Lord of the Rings and so forth, and fairies and elves and so forth. But these things at one time were true, and I guess you could say they are true now, but these are things from our past and also from our future. But it's the manifestations of our feelings and of our thoughts where they are part of the manifesting that we're experiencing life on a three-dimensional plane. And, you know, it's going back to, let's say, in the formations of consciousness, you know, incorporating a physical body or body. You know, you can go back to earlier evolutionary traits of, let's say, monkeys and apes and so forth, that they all had their own scale that they had to work with. But we also are on a grand scale, and part of this consciousness that we're experiencing now is a consciousness that we've recorded before and will experience again. And right now it's just a matter of closing up the different ways of experiencing reality and expressing reality.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm just listening to what you were saying, and I was thinking, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I was trying to get some idea of where the religious where they stand right now on the aliens, and a lot of people have talked about the Catholic Church and a lot of the suppression that you know they've been part of over the years. But I just wonder if any of that information that they have, let's say, regarding alien cultures, is going to be released, I think, with some of the findings that they've had for years and they've lived with for years. And a part of them incorporating, let's say, control over Christian beliefs combining it.
They'd already did acknowledge UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
That the Catholic Church has acknowledged the existence of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they don't exactly put that on the headline, do they?
No.
You don't really see much of that sort of thing.
No, but, hey, that's what they're saying. I don't know, George. I would like to believe that we're of an alien race or some sort, and that's cool. But I just wish we were more advanced as a race, you know, more enlightened as a race, you know, not as warmongering and as greed and avarice-filled, you know,
mm-hmm.
as we are. It would be a much better world, and we'd be much more connected to the universe, I think, at that point than...
Well, I'm going to feel my connection to the universe. As soon as it warms up, I'll be out gardening.
Yeah.
Then you just, it's like being plugged right in to the rhythms of the earth. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
More people should do it.
That's true, Lila. That's a passion of mine. And not really mine as much. I'm not as prone to digging dirt. I don't know why. I don't mind building with stone. I don't mind building things with wood. But I, for some reason, I'm not as excited about putting flowers in the dirt. I like seeing them come up. It's just the digging in the dirt and the I don't know. I'm not as connected that way as you are. But I am connected when I pound a nail into wood or I build something out of stone or I... car or something, or I, you know, I'm rooted in it, you know. So it's just a different, it's nature, but it's a different element, you know.
It's a different form of expression.
Yeah, a different connection, you know. That's all. But it basically you're rooted to the same thing. It's just, you know, it's just a different connection. But anyway.
Well, you know, Leo, when you were talking before about dwarfs and fairies and so forth, and I know your lecture circuits on Thursday nights, you were talking about elves.
Yeah,
and
fairy tales and elves. Well, I wasn't talking about elves so much, but fairies and fairy tales. And
Leo borrowed one of my books.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bruno Bettelheim. Sources of Enchantment.
Yeah, it was a good book. It was very, very good. I liked how he talked about that. How he wove the how we're all connected. How we all get connected through fairy tales and legends and myths and parables and so on and so forth. And these things work on our conscious as well as subconscious, and they're very effective for both adults and children. And to understand the higher knowledge, or higher wisdom of whatever that is that's being told in the tale. And
I think the higher wisdom that you're talking about there is the expression of the wisdom. Instead of seeing it from a linear perspective, it's a matter of feeling it from an emotional perspective of
how you feel
about something.
It's like when you read a fairy tale to a kid, you know, the kid goes ooh and ah, and you know they feel the emotion. They feel the.
That's the superficial level. That's the concrete level. It gets into something very much deeper than that. It's about our whole passage through life.
Yeah.
And that's not what people really react to. They react to those deeper things.
But it's an emotional response.
Sometimes, yeah.
It's
sometimes
very
not
emotional response.
Sometimes not right away, but later.
Yeah, and you remember it. Or when I experience kind of brings it up and say, oh, I remember that. I talked about the three pigs, you know, building your house out of straw, building them out of wood, or building out of brick. And, you know, you don't forget that until, you forget about it until you do build something out of straw. And you see how fragile it is.
Uh-huh.
As well as sticks, and then you say, "Well, gee, yeah,
I could have built had a stone house.
I would have built this thing a stone house. I would have been better off." But you know, that's that, or on a higher foundation or harder foundation or something. But you know, fairy tales give you that practical advice, but also link it to a universal wisdom.
Yeah, to everything else in life.
Yeah.
If you build everything like a straw house, you have nothing.
You have it, but it could fall.
It doesn't last long.
House of cards, you know. So it's like, yeah. But it's a universal wisdom that's related through these tales and legends and things. And it gives you someone to aspire to. It gives you heroes. Fantastic heroes that are beyond the norm, you know, conventional world, and that's why I love Superman comics and things like that when I was a kid.
And what's happened to those Superman comics?
Oh, they're worth a lot of money if you still have them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Why? Because what do they do?
Well, they inspire you, you know. They're wonderful things. They're the wonderful characters. And
okay.
They tap into the part of you that wants to save and do good.
Yeah. Be the Avenger, you know.
Uh-huh. But you do that. You do that. It's not make believe.
Well, you do, and you know. But again, you know, it's how far you want to take it. You know, do I want to? Put a cape on and run around my neighborhood, jumping off fences. I don't know.
Gee, Leo, if I find you doing that, I'll pretend I don't know you.
That won't work too well, you know.
But, nowadays, I'll throw you in jail.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the nut house, if not.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
You like to feel that once in a while or through your life, you can be a superhero. You know what I mean?
And free.
And you can be that free and. Be able to I mean, anytime you stand up to something wrong and you fight it and you win, you feel like a superhero, you know, like you've overcome some incredible thing.
And we all mm-hmm. have that desire
yeah.
in us. It's there somewhere.
And it's fun when it happens. It's like really fun and it's really wonderful. And, you know, overcoming the odds. And that's what
yes, but even if you don't overcome the odds and you lose, it's a good experience too, Leo.
Yeah, you're still a hero, you know. You know.
That's right.
Sometimes
yeah.
heroes get to be sacrificed for the greater good, right?
But they're only sacrificed for the day because tomorrow morning you could wake up and a new day begins and you can start all over.
Well, even Lex Luthor, you know, foiled him with kryptonite. And, you know, so, you know, you have to remember that, yes, you can be Superman, but there's always something super or something more super than you are that can knock you out. And that's life and death and
yep.
the universe.
The ultimate.
Yeah, nature. Everything that's bigger than you are.
Nature's very powerful.
Yeah, but
there you go. It's almost as powerful as another Bud Light. Or it's a lot easier with a Bud Light than having to wait for it. Bud Light it just enhances the effects a lot faster and more personal.
Oh, maybe. But, you know,
well, what is the reason why you drink?
I'd rather not burp after something like conquering the universe, you know?
Yeah, it takes that whole thing away.
It takes it away, you know? Like, it's like, you know, once you've conquered, just done some incredible thing, you know, the thought of a Bud Light just doesn't do it for me. You know,
me
to celebrate right. with. But, you know, the thought of just sitting back and grinning ear to ear and with a knowing that you did accomplish
mm-hmm.
something great, that's enough, you know.
Well, that's only half of it, though, Leo. The other half is sitting back with that beer in hand under a tree and experiencing that instead of thinking about it.
Beer.
It's bringing it upon yourself.
I can't drink it anymore, so it's not a good analogy for me.
Well,
not meaningful for you.
Yeah, it's more, you know, maybe something else. But, yeah. But I think unless I can... I'm thankful to fairy tales. I'm thankful to myths and
well, that's how wisdom used to be passed down yeah. before there was written, you know, the written language.
Or understanding the greatness of nature and putting a and personifying it by putting the great Thor or you know
mm-hmm.
some other thunderous all powerful god. You know that's how it was developed. And I think just the magnificence trying to personify that power and holding on to it in some way, either by respecting it through worship or respecting it through friendship or respecting it for its great power. One or the other, whatever you respect it for, it's there in your life.
Yeah.
And you know, something is much more powerful than you are, is controlling your life, you know. And,
well,
the dead went to Valhalla, you know, in the Norsemen.
In a rowboat.
Well, in a sailboat.
In one of those boats one of those boats they had.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I guess it wasn't a rowboat.
They burned, they went to Valhalla. We go to heaven, or we go to the fourth dimension, or whatever we decide we want to go to. But we imagine it before we die, and whatever we think of when we die is where we go. You know?
Well, that's the envision that we're experiencing now,
yeah.
Because we're all dying, and we're all practicing our death, and that is part of this fourth dimensional illusion that we're experiencing now, besides the death of things around us like finances and so forth. It's the death of those that we've attracted to ourselves for so many years that gave us pleasure.
Right.
And the pleasure that we're questioning now, you know, is it really our pleasure or somebody else's pleasure that being experienced? And if nothing else, that's what we're coming to realize, that, you know, we have the right and we have the ability to experience ourselves, you know, our own enlightenment, instead of something that is programmed. And that's how we live. We live a programmed reality. It's nothing like George Orwell could imagine, but it's what we can linearly compose.
What were you
going to
say there?
I don't know. I was just trying to think of where does that leave us? Where does that leave us as far as where do we go?
Well,
it leaves
us at a beginning.
Where should we exist?
It leaves us at the end, and at every end is a beginning.
Well,
right.
Well, I like to. I don't want to lose my heroes. You know, my make believe heroes. I don't want to lose them.
Why would you?
Well, outgrow them. You know. Things.
Oh, you never outgrow them.
I always admired my heroes, and but none of them were ever really human.
Yeah.
They were always, make believe.
Well, because you know, you have human heroes, and then you realize
they're like you.
Very fallible, and
I want infallible people. I want people that I want heroes that can't
don't
be
make
broken.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Very difficult to have a human hero.
I want to be a superhero.
And with advanced technology and communication, you make a mistake. You're not. For instance, let's take a look at President Obama. He had such a short honeymoon. His honeymoon was practically over before he stepped over the threshold.
Really?
You know. Right,
but the thing was, he was a phony.
Yeah,
and everybody
100 years ago, you could have been a phony, and nobody would have discovered that till you're out of office.
Yeah, but 100 years ago, you would have been laughed out of the country. You know, you would have been shot or hung.
Well, as a black person, probably.
Yeah.
But let's just the point I'm trying to make is the communication today doesn't allow you to get away with too much. I mean, for instance, when you wrote a check, you had some many days of grace before it bounced.
Mm-hmm.
And you could rush and throw something into your checking account. You know, you could write a check knowing you didn't have enough money, and a couple of days later, or even a day later, you could stick some money in there and you'd be fine. Today,
mm-hmm.
they take it out just as you, before the ink's even dry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gone from your account. And they charge you $20 if it gets bounced.
And it's gone from your account, yes. But understand, it's gone now for different reasons than it did, let's say, 10 years ago. Now it's gone because they need that money in order to keep what they're doing, keep doing what they're doing, to keep doing it. And, I mean, if you don't have money coming in following the money you just gave out, you'll never be able to stay in business. And that's the problem. As fast as the money in, they need money to replace it. And even though the ink is not dried yet, you know, that's the way business has been forced to deal with business. And that's the problem right now, because they can't keep up with, let's say, a demand of raw goods. So, you know, it's good if you can order something, but it's not good when you need that product today and it's back ordered 6 weeks from now, you know. It's like not having it.
Well, George, the time is up. We got about 30 seconds before we hang up. Is there anything you want to say? Close the show.
Well, I'm looking forward to a couple of weeks from now when we'll be going into a spring season, and I'm looking forward to this night to turn around and start letting us see some of the light that we should be receiving. And if nothing else, this health care package that the government is working on now, you know, I'm just praying in a sense that, something good will come out of this in the near future instead of having to wait for a couple of years for it to manifest.
Me too.
Or even if it goes, even if they pass it today, even if they passed it this year, they wouldn't be effective until 2013.
However, you'll start paying for it immediately.
Yeah, so it's like, geez.
We'll see what happens with that. I'm on your page, though, with that, George. I pray that it'll be something useful and so that many Americans have coverage. You know, to live without health care is such a worry, especially as you get older or if you have a disabled child or something like
that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And I think it's one way that we can look at the future here instead of all crying and sitting down and pointing fingers. There is a good aspect to this, and all we have to do is wait for it to come around and, you know, grab it when it does, because it will. It will.
All right. Well, on that note, we will say good night.
And good night, George. It was nice talking with you.
Thanks so much.
It's always nice.
Good night.
It's always nice talking with you guys, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right,
pal.
Yep.
Good night.
Talk to you later.
I'll be with you.
Okay. And I want to thank everybody here tonight, and wish you a good weekend. Join us right here again on Wednesday night, next Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday. And if you missed this show or you came in late, check us out on the archives.
Yep.
And have a pleasant evening.
Good night, folks.